Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast, episode number 181. I am your host, Beam Weeks. And with me is Mr. Stephen Gies. How you doing? Are you keeping warm down there, Mr. Gies?
Well, yeah, we do have a heater, even though it is Alabama. But yeah, it's kind of weird. I look out the window and the ground is white. Now it's not quarter inch thick, which is still a lot for down here. But the state of Alabama has been shut down since Friday. I mean, shut down. Everything, schools closed, doctor's offices closed. You can drive down the highway and all the businesses are closed. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, it's been cold. We're staying warm. How about you?
We have been most of this week below zero. We were above zero during the day today. We're at about 8 degrees right now, but it's going to plunge. And then I believe next week we're actually going to get some warmer weather in the 30s and even touch 40, I think, on a couple of those days. So the snow we've got will most likely be gone by that time. But it's winter time in Michigan, so we expect that.
All right. Now, you subscribers who follow the blog storyempire.com, and if you don't, why not? Get over there and follow it. It's 12 writers who are experts in their field who each month, three times a week, they alternate posting how-to stuff for writers, the writing life, writer community, stuff like that. Today at storyempire.com is my post for this month, and I've introduced a series on outlining. Those of you who are pantsers and think that outlining is not useful for you, I'm imploring you, give that series a chance. You might find some ideas there that are worth pursuing. And while you're at it, if you don't already subscribe, get in there and subscribe to it. Now, another member of Story Empire is co-host Beam Weeks. And you've just got put one up there this past week. What's that about, Beam?
Yeah, actually it was last Wednesday. And it's for you fiction writers, your thoughts on adding sex scenes to your stories or not. What is your thoughts on it? And some authors, you know, they commented that they're awkward, so they don't like to put them in there. And some of them don't like the overkill. And some of them are like, leave it to the imagination. Close the bedroom door and let, you know, the reader imagine what's going on and then just move the story on. So a lot of great feedback on that. And, yeah, get over there to storyempire.com and check those out. And there's some really good stuff out there from all the other contributors as well. So, yeah, cool.
Yeah, and do leave comments when you're over there, people, because we all are very interactive there. When we put our posts up each month, we go check throughout the day and we respond to virtually every comment and we get some good discussions going. So get out there, follow it, and participate as well. StoryEmpire.com.
And share. Hit that share button. Share it on Twitter and wherever else you're on social media, because there's a lot of great advice and tips for writers out there on here. And if there's other writers out there that may need help in a certain area, Story Empire is the place to be for that.
Yeah. Now, at Fresh Ink Group here, we have this thing about, we kind of like it when one of our books makes it to the number one Amazon bestseller list. And it's pretty cool because two of our authors have hit that milestone this week. First, let's talk about Gwen M. Plano. She's got her new novel, The Soul Whisperer's Decision, which is not actually going to be released until, or was it yesterday? I think it was. So, yeah, sometime this week is the actual release date for The Soul Whisperer's Decision by Gwen M. Plano. And it has, as of this week, hit number one Amazon bestseller status. So congratulations, Gwen M. Plano, on your Amazon number one bestseller for The Soul Whisperer's Decision. Now, we've got another one this week. This is a short story published by Robert G. Williscroft, our submarine thriller, Cold War submarine thriller, and science fiction writer, author, member at Fresh Ink Group here, and his short story is called Reality Hack. You can find that over on Amazon. Go to Robert G. Willis Croft, look for Reality Hack. It received third place in the U.S. Naval Institute Fiction Contest, and now, as of this week, it is number one new release in 30-minute mm-hmm. computers and technology short reads. That's Robert G. Willis Croft's short story, Reality Hack. Get over there and find that on Amazon.
Yeah, congratulations to Gwen and to Robert. Now, Gwen's also got a new trailer out for the Saul Whisperer's Decision as well. Gwen M. Plano's The Gift is out now. It's part of the Harbor Point series, and this also includes Harmony Kent and all of the ladies of Story Empire. They put this together. It's eight novellas, and they're doing really well, getting great reviews. And we're proud to have Gwen M. Plano, her book published through us, and we are working on some stuff promoting Harmony Kent's as well. So get out there and check those out, the Harbor Point series. Listeners, we've got an interesting guest tonight. So if you want to call in with a question or a comment, here's how you can do that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now and join us on air or tweet us with the hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body and we'll read your comment or question live. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah.
All right. We got another new book out. This is Edge of Smoke, which is the sequel to The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. We also have a new trailer for that. We're going to be swapping out a shot that's in that trailer probably tonight or so. So there'll be a new version of it up in the next day or two. But that's Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Toms.
All right. Robert McKenzie, he is scoring some serious profile upgrades in various periodicals such as LA Weekly, New York Weekly, and the London Post. This is our very own Robert McKenzie, the author of the Chair series, and he's going to be a guest in, I think, next month. So go check out the newsletter for the links to these. Today's newsletter has the links to each of these profiles on him. And, hey, show him some support, and we all appreciate that. You know how writers are. We need support. Mm-hmm. Without that support, I mean, you know, what are we doing?
What are we
all
doing?
Right. Speaking of the newsletter, if you're not subscribed to the newsletter, why aren't you? But if you're not, here's how you can become a subscription holder.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What? All right. The audiobook I've been working on for a while, The King's Ransom, Tales and Legends by Cheryl Carpinello. I finished the final editing on it, hopefully, and hopefully she's got the files, and hopefully she gives the go-ahead, and we will have this thing up and published in a matter of days, and I will be putting together a book trailer for that as well, so keep your eyes and ears open for that.
All right. Let's take a look at what's happening in the top 25 Fresh Ink Group bestsellers for this week. Starting at the bottom, The Rise and Fall of a Construction Giant, The History, People, and Stories of CFW Construction by Dick Ferrer, Jr. That's a fun one to keep seeing on the list. It's been out for 7 years now. Very small regional book about a local company. Turns out to be of interest to people all over the world. Above that, Mary Schmidt's Sammy, Hero at Age 5. This is told from the point of view of her 5-year-old son, who she lost to pediatric brain cancer. It's a memoir from the child's point of view. Above that, Larry Landgraf's The Adventures of Ali Orangutan. This is an illustrated chapter book about a chimpanzee who's captured, being brought to America to be put in a zoo, and he escapes and goes on an adventure. Above that, Robert McKenzie. This is part of his Chair series. And he's got The Chair Volume 1, Lightning, Thunder, and Glory, and then the one above that is The Chair Volume 2, Faith, Hope, and Love. 3 and 4 are already out, so let's see if either of those made the list. Now, above those, we've got B.A. Johnson's Sassy Discovers the AME Church. This is the first of 2 illustrated chapter books about a little girl who's learning about her church. Above that, we've got Kanoi K's memoir, My Three Wishes, memoir of a Hawaiian dancer whose family troupe traveled the world. A lot of fun stories in that, very cool photos and stuff. What a great life that she managed to live with her family. Ah, now we've got David Carroll. Hello, Chattanooga, famous people who have visited the Tennessee Valley. This is becoming a perpetual bestseller. And then above that, J.S. Looney, The Trial of William Shakespeare, a dramatization of the authorship controversy in which the audience renders a verdict. This is a play, and it can be read like a novel or a story, but it can also be put on and performed like a play as well. J.S. Looney has several of those, and this week he has made the list again. Above that, Vladimir Kalixti. She's a therapist in Manhattan, and her book, Naked and Transparent, Six Vital Tools for Knowing Yourself and Attracting Healthy Relationships, is steadily moving up the list, even though that's been out for about 4 or 5 years now. Now, our next two books are by Kenneth Lindquist. We have How to Teach Driving Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, Instructor's Edition, and then just above that, How to Teach Driving Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, Parents Edition. These are both How to Teach Driver's Ed. The first one is for people who want to become certified instructors in their various states, and the other one is for parents or people who just have young people they care about and want to help them be better drivers. Now, above that, we've got Dr. Helen Burrell's American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients and Pain, and she wants us to mention that opioid patients who have lost their opioid prescriptions, there's information in this book about how to get your prescriptions back, so pay attention to that. Now, we've got another new release on here, Robert G. Willis Cross, RAN, A Civilization in Hiding, The Third Ort Chronicle. And if the Third Ort Chronicle doesn't tell you there's a Second Ort Chronicle and a First Ort Chronicle, you're not paying attention. He's got all three of those Ort Chronicle books out now. We're getting ready to put out a fourth one here in a couple of weeks or so. And that hardcover edition, yes, Robert, it's the hardcover of your novel that has worked its way up our list. But I see above it, if I jump up three more slots, the paperback edition is on here as well. Now, between those, we've got the hardcover and paperback editions of Celebrate 98, The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football Vols 1998 National Championship. College football season is over now, and, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but my team, Michigan, is the champion this year. But there's still going to be a lot of interest year-round in these kinds of books, and this is a collector's edition as well with all the pictures, the behind-the-scenes stories from a guy who was there and saw it all. So Celebrate 98. Check that out by Dave Hooker. Now, another Robert G. Willis Croft, Operation Ivy Bells, a Mac McDowell mission. This is the first of four Mac McDowell missions that are out right now, and he's working on number five. These are submarine Cold War thrillers. Here we are, Robert McKenzie's The Chair, Volume 4. This is the new release. This is the next up on the list. And Robert, it's the hardcover edition. Yes, the hardcover is dramatically outselling the paperback edition on a lengthy novel. That's pretty cool. So congratulations, Robert. Now, this gets us to the top six. And this is a fun one to see. One of the very first books Fresh Ink Group published. I mean, this is way back, 15, 20 years ago, something like that. The Autumn Tree by Aisha Ehsan. She's a Pakistani nationalist who's a TV newscaster, reporter, and a researcher and college teacher who is working in the United Arab Emirates. And her book, The Autumn Tree, which is a novel and has been out for decades, is number six on our bestseller list this week. So you see, people, once you put them out there, don't forget about them. Just keep them alive as long as you can, and there's always new audiences to find. So that gets us to the top five. Print bestsellers from Fresh Ink Group. Number five, the hardcover edition of Mark Herndon's The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. Mark was the drummer for the super country group Alabama for almost three decades, and he's a member of the Country Music Hall of Fame, and he's married to country music star Leah Seawright right now, and they've been working on some new music as well. So that's The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by Mark Herndon. Gwen M. Plano's The Soul Whisperer's Decision is our number four bestseller this week. And over at Amazon, she hit number one. Number one Amazon bestseller, mm-hmm. The Soul Whisperer's Decision. Hey! Top three. Top three now. In the number three slot, How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida by A.K. Wingler. Apparently, there's a lot of interest in people starting food truck businesses, because I'm looking at quite a few of these books that have moved in the past couple of weeks. So that gets us to the top two. Number two, I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, David Carroll's Homemade Social Media Blunders. This is a fun look at just a whole bunch of postings from all over the internet where people got it wrong and accidentally made it funny. David Carroll's collected them all, and he adds his own pithy comments to them as well. So it's a fun book. Makes us laugh out loud. So that gets us to our number one print bestseller this week. And at approximately triple the sales of I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, our number one bestseller this week is Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat by retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate. So that's another number one, Jerry. Congratulations.
All right. Yeah. So, congratulations to everybody on that list, especially to Jerry being up there. That book just keeps selling and selling. It's the book that keeps on going.
Yeah.
Listeners, if you've missed an episode or you're new to the program and you want to hear some of the old episodes, what we've done in the past, we're coming up on our fourth year now. So help us celebrate 4 years by tuning in each week. But if you can't, we've got an archive where you can catch all those old episodes. And if you miss one, you can always find it there. And here's how you can find those various archives.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
Sarah Jameson, a nurse at County Central Hospital, survives an accident that kills her two young children. While comatose, she travels into the heavenly realm where she visits with her precious little ones. She is given a choice, return to her husband, Jack, or remain with her children in their celestial home. Jack was not in the fated automobile. Though he heard the crash and ran to help, there was nothing he could do. He suffers the loss of his children, fears the potential demise of his wife, and wonders about his own sanity. His struggle with PTSD from his military years has returned, and at times, he cannot distinguish between the present and the past. An accident tragically changed the lives of this young family, but out of sorrow emerges unexpected blessings. You'll be deeply moved by Gwen M. Plano's new novel, The Soul Whisperer's Decision. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. The Soul Whisperer's Decision by Gwen M. Plano.
In an innocent 1958 American suburb, Shelley doesn't know the power of a kiss or how it will change her entire life. At 16 years old, she falls in love with a young man. One night, just one night, they go too far. Months later, pregnant and shamed, Shelley's parents banish her. Alone and heavily pregnant, circumstances force Shelley to cross the country in an old pickup. A mistaken turn leaves her lost in a forest amidst a severe snowstorm and in labor. In the dark of night, Shelley must get help for her newborn baby before they both perish. A light in the distance gives her the slimmest glimmer of hope. After Shelley wraps the infant in her father's old jacket, she trudges through the snow to a lighthouse keeper's cottage. Snow half buries the squat stone building. Will Shelley find shelter, or is it the beginning of the end? Read The Gift by Gwen M. Plano, published by Fresh Ink Group, exclusively on Amazon Kindle.
All right. Yeah. Okay, so we are going to, I'm going to tell you a little bit about tonight's guest, and we're going to bring him in. I'm holding my phone and doing the show from my phone in case you notice my voice is sounding a little different because the microphone here seems to be breaking up on my computer. So bear with me as I try to juggle with one hand. Chris Langlois is a proud grandson of medic Eugene Doc Rowe from the HBO miniseries Band of Brothers. His passion to share the story of the men of Easy Company, 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment of the famed 101st Airborne, led him to write How Easy Company Became a Band of Brothers that added colorful and inspiring illustrations that will immerse both children and adults, fans of the book and the miniseries, and those who know nothing of military tactics in the stories of ordinary men who courageously volunteered to join the elite paratroopers during World War II. Chris has taken his passion to elementary and middle school classrooms to speak and share with students on the courage and sacrifice of Easy Company. He also has attended several book signings across the country and in Normandy, France, and Bastogne, Belgium. Some of these book signings have been in coordination with the actors from the miniseries, many of whom have become friends. How Easy Company Became a Band of Brothers was published in 2018. In that short time, it has been translated into French, Dutch, German, and Chinese, and has sold in over 23 countries outside of the U.S. It has been well received from ages 7 to 80. Also, the author of two illustrated children's books, Chris has been with the Dallas Police Department for 16 years, where he enjoys meeting new people and placing them in jail. Okay. He spent all of his career on a street-level crime response team, narcotics and violent crime task force, and patrol. He lives in Dallas, Texas, with his 12-year-old daughter. Welcome to the show, Chris Langlois.
Gentlemen, hi. Thank you
for
having me. How are y'all?
Doing well. Glad to have you on. Let's kick this off by, you're in Dallas. Is this where you've always lived? And if not, where have you lived outside of Dallas or Texas or wherever? Where have you been in the world?
Well, my dad was in the Air Force, and I was actually born in Minot, North Dakota. So while I am not familiar with the cold up there, I have actually lived in it for the first 3 years of my life. But originally, where our family's off in Louisiana, I grew up in Baton Rouge.
Okay, wow. Baton Rouge.
Well, what took you to Dallas area?
I was just ready to see the big city. Baton Rouge is a big, small town, and I know you're Alabama over there, so I got to give you a go Tigers. I still wanted to be close to home. I still wanted to be driver, driving distance and be able to get back home. But I was ready to see the big city, and Dallas was fit the bill.
Yeah. Now, we have a tradition here at Voice of Indy. We don't have Texas authors on the show ever. In fact, I don't think there are any authors down there in Texas.
Yeah.
So,
really?
Yeah.
It seems about 75% of our guests are Texas authors.
Yeah, the last 3 or 4 months at least, yeah.
There's a bunch of us over here.
Yeah.
Yes, there are. Really good authors, too.
We think, we're pretty sure you all know each other, too, and there's something going on, but we haven't figured out what it is. So, Chris, what kind of a kid were you? Were you into reading and writing from an early age? Did you want to be a police officer when you were young? What's your childhood like?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I was a typical. We lived a little bit out in the suburbs, out in the country a little bit. So, we can't do today what we did back then with kids. You know, be gone for 3 or 4 hours in the woods. You know, it would be an Amber Alert these days. But just typical kid jumping on trampolines and riding bikes. And I did not like to read. You know, what really got me was the local library. I'll date myself, but minimum wage back then I think was like $3.75, and the parish library was paying $5.25, so it was a huge pay raise, and they had to work around your school schedule. So I got a job there, and that is actually what kicked me off into reading, just being around books all day finally enlightened me into the world out there, and that's what kind of got me started on it. And to the question on being a cop, I used to watch the television show Cops in college, and that is what inspired me to want to be a cop. And so ever since then, that's just been my goal. It took me a long time. I didn't become a cop till I was 35, but that that passion never left me, and I finally got there.
Yeah. When you said the library really started to expose you to books, can you think back, were there any particular ones that jumped out at you when you were young that really, really touched you or made you think, wow, this is pretty cool?
You know, history has always been an interest to me. I'm just fascinated by people who lived thousands of years ago and how similar they are or were to us, and then how dissimilar they were, that we've advanced so far in this age. But yet, you know, love was the same, love of your children, you know, creating a lasting legacy. So those things have always touched me. And of course the military side, when you talk about ancient Rome or things like that, where you, you talk about the conquest and the ability of, to go from a small hill in Rome's case to, you know, a vast empire. So just the, sometimes the, what the ancients accomplished is pretty mind-boggling, even still here today. So that's the kind of stuff that really, really has always attracted me.
So being a police officer, I'm guessing there was some college involved in there. What's your educational background? And since you're still somewhat young, any future plans to maybe go back and get a degree in something to further your career?
You know, so I graduated high school in Baton Rouge and did my 4 years at LSU, graduated at LSU in a degree in economics. And, you know, we can always go back. There's a lot of incentives here in Texas. I think the in the state-wise, the state will actually reimburse a lot of our education if we take criminal justice classes and things like that. And if I were going to promote and try to be upper echelon in the department, I would probably go that route. But to be honest, after 16 years, I am still a street cop. I love being a street cop. I cannot foresee not being a street cop. I guess it would take something physically. I'm just not able to do it anymore. But there is no there's no replacement for being a street cop. There's no turning on those lights. You know, we have a tone, what we call a tone. So a loud beep comes over the radio, and that means it's a lights and sirens call is basically what it means. And so there's just no substitute for that. All of a sudden, that tone happened. And last night it was. We had a shooting last night. It was a double murder. I mean, it's just there's no substitute for driving fast and getting, you know, the one of the first guys on the scene. You got dead bodies and people going crazy and things like that. It's just a it's a world that I can't imagine leaving. Once you become a sergeant, you're in the office a lot. You're not on the streets as much. So I think I'll be a street cop until they tell me I can't be one anymore.
Cool.
So, Chris, are you an adrenaline junkie? Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah. I would have to admit I've skydived. So, yeah, I think I would call myself an adrenaline junkie.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. All right, we are talking with Chris Langlois, and we are going to go through a commercial, and we've got a caller on the line on hold, so we'll come back and find out who that is.
When guilt-ridden Mia checks into a suicide hotel but can't go through with a final act, vengeful ghosts gather to torment her. Set in the near future, the post-war world is in turmoil. Mia Hawthorne suffers an emotional breakdown following the death of her wife and loses everything to a corrupt government. In an ironic twist of fate, the government's suicide department, The Last Sanctuary, allocates a desperate and destitute Mia to the very hotel and family heirloom which she has so recently lost. On her first day at the Lighthouse Inn, beset with painful memories, doubts and questions, Mia finds herself coming face to face with angry ghosts who gather to goad and torment her. Lost and alone, can Mia find enough strength and purpose to avoid her final, frightful fate? Read The Room at the End, Harbor Point Series Book 8 by best-selling author Harmony Kent, exclusively on Amazon Kindle.
All right. Go grab that. That's part of the Harbor Point series that we spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
All right, we do have a caller. We do have a caller, so let's go ahead and take this caller here on the telephone. Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, caller. Manhattan. What's your name and where are you calling from? Okay. We're going to go ahead and take that off on hold. That actually might be Dr. Helen. She's already posted her question on Twitter. So how about we take one of me to read this question here off of Twitter?
Yeah, because I can't find the question. Go ahead.
Okay. The Dr. Helen's question is, hello, Officer Langlois. Congratulations on your book's popularity in many European nations. Now, please describe your children's book spinoffs about the Band of Brothers.
Ah, very good question. So My first book is probably middle school and up, and just kind of replays the story of Band of Brothers. And I saw a picture of a guy had drawn a picture of a paratrooper, and it looked like a 10-year-old boy. And I thought, that looks really cool. What if I could connect to 10-year-olds and let them see themselves as a paratrooper? And so that was the genesis for Patrick the Paratrooper. And so Patrick is a 10-year-old boy, and his patriotism is roused after the attack on Pearl Harbor, and he enlists in the Army, sees a sign for paratroopers and joins the paratroopers, and lo and behold, is assigned to Easy Company. So then he follows Easy Company's path, and it's a way just to kind of introduce World War II to that age bracket and get them thinking about what these men did and what the country looked like at that time, and really start planting those seeds. Here's what patriotism looks like. Here's what battling evil looks like on a very simplistic scale, and what your brothers in battle look like, what these guys mean to each other. They become more than buddies. Obviously, they become a band of brothers. And so that's Patrick the Paratrooper. And then I'm just finished up. I'm waiting for my copies to arrive. The Men of Easy Company, this Draftee is a true story. My third book is a true story. Draftee was a stray dog. And the Men of Easy Company were part of a 2nd Battalion march to beat the Japanese Army's world record. And they marched from their camp, Camp Tocoa, to Atlanta. And they did beat the Japanese Army. Don't want me to ruin the surprise. But along the way, they met a dog. And so Draftee tells the story of the men from his point of view. So, again, just a way to try to reach that younger generation and let them see what these men do when they join the armed forces. It's a commitment. It's not comfortable. They marched for a long way. You know, their feet hurt, their ankles hurt, they twisted ankles, and their buddies had to carry them, and it was cold. And so just to see the commitment that our soldiers give us on a day-to-day basis, I just wanted to help find another way to plant that seed with these next generations and make them love America, love our military, and understand what it takes to protect our freedom.
Now, so, the children that you go and share this with at these various schools, are they genuinely receptive? Do they have questions, and do they engage?
They do, and you know, I just finished up a high school a couple months ago here, not too far from Dallas. And you know, to be honest, you know, the elementary kids were almost more engaging than the high schoolers. They were, and of course, a lot of them, Call of Duty, the video game, had planted some of those seeds. Them, they knew what Tommy guns were. But when I asked them very basic questions, what do you know about World War II? I mean, they all had, you know, it was a long time ago. Good answer. A lot of people died. Was one of the, you know, I'll never forget that. One of the kids in the back. A lot of people died, and I said, you're absolutely right. And so I was really surprised that death was, you know, at such a young age, you know, prevalent, but it underscores what they're learning. You know, yes, war is bad. A lot of people die. World War II was, you know, 50 million people if you put it all together. And actually at the very end, and again, you just never forget these kids, but I mean, I was literally moved to tears. And one kid said, I remember that these guys died for our freedom, and I almost lost it with a bunch of second graders. So I was very impressed with the younger generation's knowledge and understanding at their level.
Now, both of these children's books, Patrick the Paratrooper and How Easy Company Became a Band of Brothers, show a co-author. Is that your illustrator in both cases?
Correct. Yes, I've had three different illustrators on each book, and not that I didn't want the other illustrators, but I think each story stands alone, and we'll see if there's a second version of Patrick the Paratrooper that becomes a series, and I would use that same illustrator again without a doubt.
Well, tell us who these illustrators are. Throw some names around. Give some people some credit.
Yeah. So my first illustrator is actually in the Netherlands. Annika Helleman is an illustrator, a painter in the Netherlands. And so they are very appreciative of the 101st Airborne because that's who liberated their country in World War II. And so They have a profound love of the U.S. and the Army, and specifically the 101st Airborne. Ricardo Lima did my second book, Patrick Paratrooper, and he is a computer illustrator. So very different than my first one, who painted and used the regular arts. He's a much more modern, and it's a really cool. He's got some really cool graphics. My third illustrator for Draftee is a local lady here in the Dallas Metroplex, Dawn Secord. And she has won some awards. She's a children's book author and illustrator herself, and has won some awards for her work. So I was very excited to have her on, bringing her expertise and her experience to Draftee. She's a dog person. So Draftee being a dog, she really was very passionate about it. So I've been super, super fortunate with my illustrators.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, we're going to run another commercial now. And listeners, if you want to call in and talk to Chris with a comment or a question, the phone number is 516-453-9902.
In the Pruitt-Igoe slums of St. Louis in the 1960s, a heroin addict mother breaks her son's dolls and screams, "You are not a girl." However, no one can convince Stephanie to live as Stephen. Her mother pimps her out to a man who rapes and takes pictures of her. After finding her mother brutally murdered, she is placed in Christian foster care, where they also try to convince her to accept being male. Her mother's lover is sentenced to life in prison for the murder. Author of widely praised The Calling Dream, Carlisle Toms brings back famed televangelist Pastor Ronald Dennison in this unflinching sequel, Edge of Smoke. Dennison sets up a trust that allows a compassionate old neighbor to adopt Stephanie out of foster care. Still, she is violently bullied at school for identifying as female. The trust pays for transition surgery at 18, and she begins to live fully as a woman. Frightened by men, she remains a virgin until she falls in love with Jordan. But she runs into the man who abused her and remembers her childhood pledge to kill him. Will her lust for murdering the man who brutalized her as a child cause her to lose the man she loves? Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, The Calling Dream, and now Edge of Smoke, can be found anywhere and shipped everywhere in jacketed hardcover and softcover editions, or downloaded in all ebook formats. Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Toms.
All right. Carlisle Toms is another one of those Texas authors. He's not originally from there, but that's where he's at nowadays. So, Chris, when you're not out there driving around and getting that adrenaline fixed or writing books, what do you like to do with your spare time? You got any hobbies or interests?
There's so little spare time these days. You know, I really, I enjoy spending time with my daughter. It's we all have busy schedules. She's got her own set of busy schedules with softball and basketball and whatever's the next season coming up. So when I'm not doing police work or book work, I spend a lot of time with her whenever I can.
All right. Steven, you there? Mr. Gies? Okay, maybe not. So we're going to move down to some of the writing process. How long have you been writing? You know, we got a little bit of that from you, but what's the evolution of your writing?
Yeah, so, luckily for me, I have so far focused on things that I knew a little bit about, Banner Brothers, between the book and the miniseries and all the other books and by the men, has given me a real solid foundation of the stories. And really, my first book was really came out of the idea that we were losing the veterans. We started losing Winters and Garnier and Bill and Babe and Buck Compton and Malarkey and these guys. And they were really some of the bigger names in the company, but they were also guys that went and spoke to kids at schools. And so I thought, man, if we start losing these stories to the kids, that's really where we're gonna really miss out on the opportunity to instill these ideas in the next generations. That's where my first book really planted that seed in me. And so I started at the beginning. I started at the beginning of their training, and I worked through the story as it happened chronologically. And I thought, you know, I can knock this out in 3 or 4 months. And it took me a year and a half. And so that's a 60-page book, half of it is illustrated. But it's a completely different thing when you have to write about real men and real history. And you can't wing it. It's got to be exact. It's got to be accurate. And then I tried to make it informative for people who had even watched the miniseries, you know, 10, 20, 30 times. And there's plenty of people who can claim that. So making a book that was informative, interesting, and captured the attention of people who were both fans of the series or had never watched it or read the book was the challenge that caused me to really work on it for 18 months. Very proud of it still. And really, the other two have just been inspirations. I saw that picture of Patrick, and, you know, that's on the cover, and I just thought it just hit me like a bolt of lightning. And that's where that idea came. And then Draft E, about the dog, I was doing a book signing at the World War II Museum in New Orleans, and on a break, while there was no one in there, I was walking around their bookstore, and there was a book about a dog that the Marines had in World War II in the Pacific. And it just hit me. I said, wait a second, we've got a dog. And so that's, you know, it's just inspirations that just struck my lightning. And then I worked through it, you know, around 50, 60 hours a week of being a cop, you know, nights and weekends. And it's really nothing fancy. You know, my degree is in economics, like I said. And, you know, I'm not a trained writer. I've taken no classes on writing. I just try to put it together as it happens chronologically. This is the easiest thing for my simple mind to process.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
All right, great. So, I mean, this is basically the story of Doc Rowe, right?
So, the first book is really about the whole company. I just kind of retell the story.
Okay. Who is Doc Rowe? What is he to you? Tell us a little more about Doc Rowe.
Sure. So Eugene Doc Rowe is my mom's dad. He was the only medic in the Banner Brothers that made it from D-Day to Hitler's Eagle's Nest, and he was never really off the line. So he fought the entire war. All the other medics were either killed or hurt on D-Day, or they were replacements after D-Day. So his tenure in the unit, in addition to what the men describe as him being an angel, gave him the inspiration for me that I didn't know what I didn't know. And so I did not learn about my grandfather's service in World War II until the miniseries came out in 2001. And so I, along with the rest of America, watched the miniseries every Sunday, and that's how I learned about who my grandfather was in the war. But to me, he was Paw Paw, and he was pretty much just a cowboy. He worked his entire life outdoors, building roads, working on bulldozers and backhoes, and wore cowboy boots every day, drove a pickup truck, and smoked Lucky Strikes until it killed him. He was just he was part of the greatest generation, who was just a simple man who came back after the war and helped build America. And so the miniseries in 2001 changed me in a lot of ways, and so it's been an integral part of my life ever since then.
Well, did you get to spend time with him and hearing some of the stories firsthand?
No, he talked almost nothing about the war, like so many of the men. The few stories that I have from my aunt and uncle and my mom, I could tell you in a couple of minutes. He just didn't talk about it. And he died in 98. So the series came out in 2001. So he died just before the series came out. So one of my huge wishes, if I could go back in time, was pull up a tape recorder and just say, tell us, you know, start talking. I wish I had all those stories.
Hmm.
Yeah. Wait. My ex-wife, her grandfather had fought in World War II, and this guy, he used to tell some of the greatest stories. He spoke often about it. And that's one of the things I loved listening to. He'd start talking about it and how he got wounded in the hip just after he got on the ship. He was in the South Pacific, got a bullet ricocheted off the, the deck and hit him in the hip. You know, he was there for, you know, like 2 months. Boom, he's sent back home to recover. He had just gotten married, too, before he got in. So his wife got to, you know, kind of work on him for 2 weeks. Then they sent him right back out there. And you know, he was one of those guys that talked openly about it. And I know a lot of them don't, but, you know, he did. And it was really cool. And like you just said, I wish I would have had a tape recorder and sat down and got some of his stories, because they were just they're pieces of history that are gone. He's passed away now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So I try to make up for that by telling these stories the best way I can, and so the next generations we don't miss those stories, and these kids that are growing up now we're gonna go read those the books that I read now. When they grew up, I want them to read the books that I'm reading now and learn these stories of these guys.
Oh, since this book came out, have you heard from any of the others who were in the war with your grandfather?
Yes. So, 2001, when we went to Normandy, France for the premiere with HBO, that started off the whole thing for me. So I attended several of the reunions. The guys had an annual reunion since 1947. So they had been getting together every year. And so I attended several of those, many of those. And so met several of those men, and they told me some of those stories. And it was, the great, like any author, right? And an author appreciates what another author does. And so the greatest compliment that can be said about my grandfather is by the men who he served with and cared for. Like Garnier, who lost his leg in Bastogne. He said, your grandfather was right there. Your grandfather was working on me when I lost my leg, you know? And so the admiration and respect for the medics in general and my grandfather specifically by the men who he was there with is just amazing for me. It warms my heart every time I think about it.
Wow. Did you manage to record any of that stuff?
I made the same stupid decision. You know, you're just sitting there, you're in awe of these guys. I didn't. And that's, nobody's ever asked me that question. You kind of stumped me right there and just kind of smacked me in the face with that question. Luckily, a lot of those guys were recorded. You know, they have had a lot of interviews, so we're blessed with that because they were so famous that there's a lot of interviews with those guys. So,
well, you know, I think you said he had passed away back in, 98?
Yes, sir.
Now, back then, I mean, nowadays, you would think to record that because we have these smartphones. You got your camera and you would sit down, hey, tell me some of these stories, and you'd catch them. That's almost second nature nowadays. But back then, you know, unless you had a little cassette recorder, you didn't really think about it.
That's correct. Yeah. No, basically no internet back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are talking with author Chris Langlois and Officer Langlois. And as well as an author. And we're going to do a couple of commercials, and we will come back and start talking about some more stuff.
Welcome to American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki. Darkness is where you can explore the mysterious fires of Yellowstone National Park. Be awestruck by the sheer power of a god in yellow whose very breath lays out the cosmos with his maddening glow. Recall what it's like to be there for a friend, even if that friend is hiding something insidiously infectious. Explore the poetry and short stories out of a manic, depressive mind set to entertain and also remind you that there's a way out of the darkness. Sometimes you just have to be like our local sin eater, Tucker, and say, enough is enough. So come on in and dive into American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki, proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki is available in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook.
Submariner. 30 years of hijinks and keeping the fleet afloat. Jerry Pate's semi-autobiographical collection of 60 stories recounts his 30 years in and around the U.S. Navy submarine fleet, ranging from lighthearted to wrenching. All are poignant inside looks at naval operations rarely seen by outsiders. Topics include the real story behind the shuttle Challenger tragedy, risking his own life underwater, discovering a Soviet spy living across the street, surviving when an engine ignites, critical missions, and the everyday lives of men and women of Fleet. Compiled by author Robert G. Williscroft and proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Submariner is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Dive into Submariner for hijinks and breathtaking adventure with this poignant memoir by a true American hero.
All right. That is the number one Fresh Ink Group book right now. Often number one or number two. It just seems to right at the top of the charts there.
In print, congratulations, anyway.
Yeah, congratulations to Jerry Pate on that. Now, Chris, what are you working on next? You got something, you know, a new project going?
I've got a couple of ideas. You know, there's a couple of men in the company that I would like to write about who I think I could get some material on and continue down that road. For years, myself and a buddy have been working on some behind-the-scenes interviews with the cast and the crew. I'd like to get back on that. COVID kind of put that on hold, and just some stories from the set. What, you know, what made Band of Brothers so good was the people involved and their dedication to honor the men and tell their stories down to the minutia, really, of, you know, as silly, I'll tell you, something as simple as the thread count of the patch on their sleeve. They would find, they found an original Screaming Eagle patch from World War II and counted the threads of the patch. So when they reproduced them, it was exactly what it was back then. And so that kind of just dedicates, yeah, just an amazing dedication to making this series so realistic and truthful to the best of Hollywood's ability. Is the reason why the series still holds the power that it does. What are we talking, 22 years later now? So that's something in the back of my head. I'm just getting drafty done, and so we'll hopefully have some book signings coming up this year that I can start spreading his story around.
Huh. So, Chris, how do you publish? Do you work with a publisher? Do you self-publish? You start your own outfit? How do you put this all together?
Yeah, I tried to at the beginning, knowing nothing. I went to Amazon because that was just the biggest thing out there. And all of my books are in landscape, 11 by 8.5. And so Amazon did not print in that format. And so I found Ingram Spark self-publishing, and that's who I've got these three books through. And it's worked well so far. For me, getting the books, I do sell some a little bit on my social media, but I've really enjoyed being able to go out and do autographs and book signings in person and meet a lot of people. It's just amazing to hear the stories of how Band of Brothers has impacted so many people's lives, and I still get emails. From guys who, I joined the Army because of Band of Brothers, or I became a medic in the Army because of your grandfather. And so, just being able to shake people's hands in person and seeing those out. So self-publishing has worked for me because I can order a box, when I'm running low, and, I can put them in the mail, or I'm off to, off to Louisville and next month, hopefully to a book signing out there. So it's worked pretty well for me so far.
Well, so who all do you work with to make this happen? Do you use beta readers? Do you have an editor? Do you use cover designers? How do you get it all done?
Because knowing nothing about this, I just stumbled through the process. My illustrators obviously sent me their work. I've got a buddy here in town who is a professional photographer, and he photographed the art, and he's real good with the Adobe, Brent Baxter. With Side B Productions, has turned those into files that I could stick into a PDF or a Word document. I found a guy in India on Fiverr who has done all of my formatting, and just a real quick turnaround formats it for me. Since I don't know anything about that side of the process, I don't know how to do Adobe or anything like that. I'm completely ignorant on that. And then I upload it as a PDF to Ingram Spark's website, and bam, I have a book. It's kind of miraculous that it happens, that I'm sitting here staring at my books right here, that they're physical things right here in front of me. So for a guy who doesn't know what he's doing and didn't know what he's doing, I've really just stumbled along with it and kind of figured out as I went.
All right. Well, we're going to run one more commercial here, and then we want to hear some more about the events that you've attended where you've got to go out there and meet some people, sign autographs, and see what kind of fan reaction you've had.
Cool.
I'm David Carroll, and I'm proud of my recent books, Chattanooga Radio and Television, Volunteer Bama Dog, and Hello Chattanooga, Famous People Who Have Visited the Tennessee Valley. Like many folks, I spend too much time on social media, but I put that time to good use. For years, I've been collecting social media misspellings, misinterpretations, and other mishaps, from tweets, text messages, even the signs you see at stores and on the highways. I've collected the funniest foul-ups in my latest book, I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, David Carroll's homemade social media blunders. I top them off with my own snarky comments, and they're illustrated by a talented artist, my friend Mike Salter. There are a lot of laugh-out-loud moments in the book, more than 400 of them. We all make mistakes, and sure, you can blame it on spell check, but maybe, just maybe, we didn't pay enough attention in English class. Either way, this book will bring a smile to your face or to the face of someone you love. We can all agree what the world needs now is laughter, and lots of it. I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, in softcover, jacketed hardcover, and all ebook formats.
All right. Yeah, funny book there. If you're into laughing, grab a copy of that one. That one will have you laughing. Now, Chris, you're doing book signings and whatnot. How do these come about? Do you approach places, and or do they come to you about, you know, hey, bring a box of books, we got people that want to meet you? How does this come about?
Yeah, for me, it's been a little bit of both. You know, I've signed here at local libraries in town that we're hosting authors. Been a part of that. Some military shows that have been around here I have done, and there's a big one in Louisville every year called the Show Up Shows. It is a gigantic convention center size event, and I've done that several years thanks to a buddy of mine, Eric Dorr, at the Gettysburg Museum, and he's invited me to tag along with him and a couple of the vets and a couple of the different authors. So that's been nice here locally. I've done a Barnes & Noble here in town. We have Half Price Books, which is, I think, a southern, mostly southern books, just like the name sounds. It's books at Half Price, which is a gold mine for any of us who love books. And I've been really fortunate. My good buddy of mine, Tim Gray, with the World War II Foundation, had several events in Normandy and Bastogne and a few here in the States, but where he had several of the actors, up to 10 and 15 of the guys from the series, and he would have events where the guys would talk about their events while they were filming and those things, so some great behind the scenes stories, and then he'd have autograph sessions and let me tag along with those. And so I've been super fortunate, just, you know, really not anything that I've done, but just Band of Brothers is such a name and a powerful force that I've just been lucky to kind of tag along with that name that people are interested in seeing and hearing. I'm always surprised that people are happy to meet me. I think it's their connection with Doc Rowe is me in person. Even though I did nothing, and I tell them all the time I didn't do anything but be born, I certainly didn't accomplish anything. But, you know, it's just a testament to these guys in the miniseries, you know, the actors and the producers and everybody who put this thing together, that the series just connects people and brings them in. And it's very moving and very touching. And they're just excited to meet me. And I accept that praise on behalf of Doc Rowe. It's not for me. They're not excited to meet Chris. They're excited to meet some connection to Doc Rowe. I'm just so sad that he's not here to get a piece of that. But I remind myself that that all of that flows to Doc Rowe. And it flows to him because of what he did. Under some very ugly conditions. It's funny because I'm not a blood guy. I'm a cop, but I can't do blood. I've got no stomach for it, literally. But when you think about what that what that guy did as a medic, as a 22-year-old kid, young man, to see the blood that he did and his buddies hurt the way they were hurt. You understand why he didn't talk about it. But, you know, I think that's part of what so many of us find heroic in him and in these guys. You know, they did things that we can't see ourselves doing. And so being at these events, the long answer to get back to you is very special. It never gets old. I've never grown old of somebody saying they're happy to meet me because of my grandfather, or they're inspired by my grandfather. You know, it's just a profound thing that Band of Brothers has created that allows us to all be connected with these stories of these men. And, you know, the cliche, you know, ordinary men doing extraordinary things, but it's not a cliche. These men accomplish some serious things by who they are and who they were, and we benefit that from that still today.
Yeah. Do you have any upcoming events that we can publicize right now?
Yeah, I'll be at the Show of Shows in Louisville in February. I think that's February 22nd, 23rd, something like that. And that's a huge event if you're anything in the military, even just walking up and down those rows, just tables and tables of military stuff. Great for kids. I think it's a great thing to bring your kids to and let them see, you know, especially little boys like myself who just, you know, you love guns and knives and swords and uniforms and patches and all that stuff. I think some of those is a way to reach kids and get them excited, because if you have a patch, then you learn about that unit, and then you learn about stories and you learn about the men. And so those are all gateways to teaching, I believe. I'll be, as all goes well, I'll be in, this year is the 80th anniversary of D-Day in Normandy, so I have plans to be in Normandy. And then, of course, it'll be the 80th anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge in Bastogne, Belgium. So both of those are on the itinerary, fingers crossed, no COVID or anything. Could other catastrophes pop up, and we can all still travel and get together again, and that I'll be in those places. So I'm excited about that.
Now make sure you send us that information, and we'll put it in the newsletter. So listeners, check the newsletter each week, and if you want to have an opportunity, especially if you're going to be in France or Belgium, if you want to have an opportunity to meet Chris, maybe get an autograph and learn more about his book or whatever, keep checking our newsletter each week, and we'll try to keep you informed.
Yeah. So, Chris, I got a question here.
Sure.
Langlois is a French name, and you spend time in Normandy. Do you speak the language?
Just a little bit. It's funny because I took 2 years of French in high school, but I've been in Dallas since 1999. So, you know, I have a lot more Spanish in my repertoire now than I do. It's kind of taken the place of my French. It's funny because, you know, we go over there. So my dad has traced our roots to the 1630s in the Champagne area of France. And then we went over to Nova Scotia. Then we fled Nova Scotia and got down to Louisiana. And as I like to tell people, we realized, the Cajuns realized crawfish were there, and we never left.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. And, you know, I've walked around some of those cemeteries in Normandy, and, you know, there's Langlois on the tombstones, you know, headstones. So it's a, It's a much, obviously there's not too many of us over here, but it's a very real name over there, and a lot of history with that name. So, it's very cool. I'd love to go back one day in Champagne, and spend some more time. I'd love to go with my dad, and he's done a lot of work in South Louisiana, going to churches, and, churches have awesome church, you know, their records are very good, a great source of information. I'd love to go just traipsing across France, checking out genealogy in that regard. So there's so much to see in the world. And every time I go to Normandy, every time I go to France, I end up in Normandy for World War II stuff. So one day I'll break off from that, I promise.
All right. So, Chris, how can people find you? How can they contact you? You have Twitter, website, email?
Yes, sir. I spend most of my social media on Facebook and Instagram under Doc Roe Publishing. That's DOCROE Publishing, Doc Roe Publishing. So you'll catch me there easy. My email is DocRoeGrandson@gmail.com. Those are the big ways to catch me. And so I try to be pretty active over there and post things that are I think people will like to see and keep up with. So find me over there.
And as always, we have a contact form at freshinkgroup.com. So any of our guests, if you listeners want to send a note to somebody and can't find them any other way, send us a note. We'll make sure we pass it along as well.
Yeah.
Well,
all right.
We've been talking to Chris Langlaw, the author of three books, and two children's books and one book looking at the Band of Brothers and his grandfather, Doc Rowe. We highly recommend these, and we really appreciate having you on the show, Chris.
Gentlemen,
yeah.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah, it's great to talk to y'all, and I appreciate all the work that y'all do to help indie authors, and I'm excited to share my time with y'all tonight.
All right.
Well, hopefully we can send some new readers your way. That's why we do this.
Yeah.
That would be great. That'd be great.
Okay, listeners, next week we're going to have Scott Stevens, one of the musicians in the group Word 66, which is a Christian rock band. And Scott's going to be on here talking about their new release and what they've been up to. And then after that,
we're finally going to get to our year-end special, the G's and Weeks year-end soiree. We had intended on doing that back in December 27th for the last episode of the year, but Blog Talk Radio went down, and we weren't able to do it live, and we wanted to do it live, so we're going to do it at the end of this month. So tune in for that, and after that,
we're going to have Robert McKenzie back. He's the author of the Chair series, which has four books out now, and we're working on putting out book five in the next couple of months or so. So Robert McKenzie will be back talking about his newest edition in the Chair series. Plus, with Robert, there's no telling what else he's going to talk about.
Yeah, he's a good guest. So, and there will be other guests lined up here. Hopefully by next week we'll be able to throw a few more names out there. I'm busy working on that, sending out invitations. So, there we go.
All right. Well, thanks again, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, fellas. Yes, sir. Thank y'all. Y'all stay warm.
All right. Yeah, we'll see everybody next week.
And enjoy your the rest of your week, everybody. Stay warm, stay safe, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
You're listening to The Voice of Indy.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag freshinkgroup.